Les grands événements du Collège de France.
Madame l'ambassadrice, monsieur le président de l'Académie des sciences morales et politiques, mesdames et messieurs les diverses personnalités en vos titres et qualités, mesdames, messieurs, chers collègues, monsieur l'administrateur du Collège de France, cher Thomas, le chef d'orchestre est un étrange soliste, un exécutant complexe formé de 120 exécutants. Monsieur le chef d'orchestre, vous êtes un monstre de la fable. Voilà ce qu'écrivait Paul Valéry dans un texte peu connu qu'il avait écrit sur Charles Lamoureux, le célèbre chef d'orchestre de la fin du 19e siècle. Et je pense qu'il est tout à fait propice pour ouvrir cette soirée. Pour ma part, je ne suis pas, vous l'aurez remarqué, Paul Valéry, mais William Marx, professeur titulaire de la chaire de littérature comparée et référent de ce cycle magnifique avec la Philharmonie de Paris, que nous accueillons donc au Collège de France, avec, vous avez vu, 6 soirées qui nous ont réunis, parlant des publics de la musique, de la composition, des mythes fondateurs de la musique, du discours littéraire en musique, des mises en scène de la musique, et eh bien il fallait terminer par peut-être le sommet, la clé de voûte de la musique et de l'organisation, peut-être de la Cité de la musique Philharmonie de Paris, à savoir l'orchestre et son chef. Et ce soir, nous aurons effectivement l'orchestre et son chef, c'est-à-dire Esa-Pekka Salonen, chef d'orchestre et compositeur, futur chef titulaire, je crois, de l'orchestre de Paris, Christian Thompson, directeur de l'orchestre de Paris, avec qui s'entretiendra Esa-Pekka Salonen. Et puis, à la fin de cette discussion, il y aura un concert par des musiciens de l'Orchestre de Paris. Mais je m'arrête ici et je vais céder la parole à notre invité de marque, à savoir Olivier Mantei, directeur général de la Cité de la Musique Philharmonie de Paris, qui va en dire plus long. Et je présente aussi Chloé Cambrelin, qui sera l'animatrice, comme la magnifique animatrice de ces soirées, comme on l'a vu les dernières fois. À vous, Olivier.
Merci cher William, merci monsieur l'administrateur, cher Thomas, merci à toute l'équipe du Collège de France. Alors pour nous c'est très important bien sûr cette série de rencontres, parce que ça dit ce qu'est aussi la Philharmonie, à savoir pas seulement une salle de concert, c'est dans sa transversalité un lieu d'activités très diverses, bien sûr, muséales, éducatives, avec un enjeu social très fort, un enjeu d'ancrage très fort aussi, et de renouvellement des publics. Mais c'est un lieu de savoir, de plus en plus. Cette collaboration nous permet de le montrer, de le dire. Et merci beaucoup, merci aux équipes qui ont travaillé sur cette série. Merci à Chloé, à qui je vais passer la parole, qui l'a aussi initié et animé avec vous. Et alors vous disiez, on finit en beauté. Oui, bien sûr, on finit avec Esa-Pekka Salonen, qui n'est pas seulement un chef d'orchestre. Comme nous ne sommes pas seulement une salle de concert. Esa-Pekka est compositeur, mais aussi est un grand chef d'orchestre, un grand compositeur, mais réfléchit avec nous et a été attiré par la Philharmonie dans ce qu'elle a justement de transversal pour s'impliquer dans la recherche, dans la réflexion, dans les projets nouveaux, dans le numérique, dans tout ce que le futur nous réserve, et pour réfléchir aussi avec nous sur la forme du concert, sur ce qu'on peut inventer dans ce siècle autour de la musique. Et c'est pour lui que nous avons créé la chaire d'innovation et de création de la Philharmonie, la première chaire. Et donc, nous sommes très heureux de l'avoir avec nous et de vous le présenter ce soir.
Et un dernier mot rapide avant l'entretien qui donc ce soir sera bien mené par Christian Thompson, pour vous dire que donc l'entretien va durer une heure environ et qu'ensuite ça enchaînera directement avec donc un court concert d'une trentaine de minutes proposé par des musiciens de l'Orchestre de Paris, membres du Page Blanche Quartet. Un mot encore aussi pour remercier de nouveau les équipes du Collège de France, remercier toutes les personnes, les artistes, les professeurs qui ont participé à ce cycle en tant qu'invités et remercier les personnes qui ont travaillé ici et en particulier, je voulais citer Reynald Bellet et Francisco Valderrama. Merci beaucoup et bonne soirée.
As Olivier explained, Esa-Pekka Salonen is a composer and a conductor, but he started as a horn player, and he's been called a giant and a superhero and a troublemaker. So the most obvious question is, why are you going to spend more time in Paris? What does Paris mean to you? And can you explain a little bit about what's going to happen with the Orchestre de Paris and also with the Philharmonie de Paris?
Well, first of all, I'm very happy to be here. Here in the Collège de France, but also in Paris. Paris was a big part of my journey to start with. I was invited to conduct the ensemble Ante Contemporain by Pierre Boulez many years ago, and he even offered me the chief conductor's position, but at that point I had already decided to move to Los Angeles and work with the Los Angeles Philharmonic, so that never happened. But Paris has been a big part of my artistic life, and the Orchestre de Paris I conducted for the first time in the 80s and have been conducting them regularly for decades now. So this is one of the longest courtships in history that finally results in a marriage. What made this position so attractive to me? Obviously, the key component is the orchestra itself and the musicians with whom I feel a very close connection and have felt this way for a long time. And I find it very satisfying and exciting to work with them. And they are very motivated, ambitious group of people, and I have this absolute certainty intuitively that we will develop together and create something which is valuable. The other component, of course, is the Philharmonie itself, which is an exceptional place in Europe and actually globally. I think it's the largest performing arts campus in all of Europe, and most likely, therefore, also larger than anything in the US. It may happen that in China there might be something that has a greater volume than the Philharmonie, but this is a unique place. Already now, during its existence, the Philharmonie has started, has been part of a civic renewal. I think the audience that comes to concerts and events at the Philharmonie is the youngest in Europe. And also, we have seen already now like a sociologically interesting changes in the area. And I have witnessed this kind of thing once before in my life, which was in Los Angeles downtown, when I was part of the Walt Disney Concert Hall project that was designed by Frank Gehry. How an arts complex can actually be a a dynamo in civic regeneration. And the downtown area of LA, which was basically nobody was living there if they didn't have to, and now it's a sort of a active, flourishing area with families and young people and so on. So I was inspired by the orchestra, but also the idea that the Philharmonie is has a function that goes beyond the art that we represent. It has a clear social function. It brings people together. There's an openness about the Philharmonie that I really love, and also the fact that it is where it is, I find really inspiring. So all these elements made my choice very simple. I want to be here and I want to be building something, experimenting, and also taking care of the great legacy, the great tradition.
It's nice that you talk about Paris like that, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the cities with which you've been most associated. And yesterday, Essa Pekka and I had lunch with Pierre Bleuze, who is the music director of the Ensemble Intercontemporain. And he had just come back from conducting concerts in Helsinki. And he looked at Essa Pekka and said, "This is incredible. This is a dream, this city, where you can sell concerts with any kind of repertoire." And in fact, it made me think that Helsinki and Paris, one could maybe say the same thing. But when you started out as a composer, and I think there was a little anarchy between you and Magnus Lindberg and Kaija Saariaho. And I read a quote where you said that when you first gave concerts, there were tens of people that would come and listen. How did that feel then to be a pioneer, to be really at the forefront of something that was very, very modern?
We felt like every generation, young generation feels, that people before us were stagnated and they were part of the establishment, and we should not only challenge the establishment but also offer something different. So indeed we had this group of young composers called Ears Open, and the late Kaija Saariaho, a close friend of mine, and Magnus Lindberg and many other people, we thought that serial music is a great social agent. Now I have revised my opinion on that, but but that was really the party line, and we decided to take European modernism outside the centers, to the countryside and to prisons and old people's homes and schools and so on. And we did, but as Christian said, there were moments when the audience consisted of the janitor and his dog and my mother. which is not jeopardizing the actual quality and importance of the event, but still, you know, it's a so what happens then, of course, in life is that you challenge the institutions and the establishment, but then the way the establishment works, that it doesn't destroy you, it embraces you, and you become part of the establishment. So that's the journey, basically, for all of us. Angry young people, we become angry old people, which is... and at this point in my life, I feel like a dual function, and partly I'm still interested in creating something completely new, and I'm interested in the position of this kind of music we represent in society and in culture and so on. But I'm also very happy to be a guardian of the legacy. So it's almost like being a gardener. So you have this beautiful garden with big tree trunks and then like new growth and so on. And your job, your duty is to make sure that the garden flourishes. So it needs some pruning and some kind of care and so on. But I like to see this culture I represent as an organism. It's not a machine. It's not a sum of its parts. It really is like a living organism. And I'm happy and proud to be part of that fabric that we call music history.
So it seems strange to be here in the Collège de France and talk about education just for a moment, but it's something that you said even yesterday with Pierre, that the reason why concerts in Helsinki now with the Finnish Radio Symphony or the Helsinki Philharmonic are so full, because there is a culture there where music education is at the heart of what happens there. It happens in other countries. I dare to say, as an Englishman working in France, that perhaps it could be better here. Is that something that you've seen in Helsinki, and it's something that you fight for?
I would say that the arts generally are under attack. The performing arts and also arts education. I don't know any European country, or obviously the US also, where the arts education in public schools wouldn't be somehow challenged politically. And that, of course, is deeply, deeply worrying. But the Finnish story, of course, is a story of a young, small nation trying to optimize its the use of its talent. And in the 70s, a communal music school network was created in Finland. And the idea was that wherever a child was growing up in Finland, that child would have access to music, music education. And that child would have access to instruments, and it would be all free or very cheap. So the financial position of the parents would play no role in this. And then the most dedicated and talented kids would then have access to the higher music education, and then there would be the Sibelius Academy, which would then educate young musicians to professional level. And I must say that has been working very well, even until now. But as I said, there are forces, political forces, that dislike the idea of education and the arts and anything intellectual. That is seen as a threat in certain quarters. And I don't have to be more specific, because we all know what I'm talking about. But so, in a sense, we live in a paradoxical world when the new generation of musicians is best ever in the history of world. I mean, whenever I hear auditions and, you know, young composers, young conductors, young instrumentalists and singers, they're wonderful, really stunningly talented and dedicated and skillful. And at the same time, you read in the media stories about the you know, death of classical music, for instance. And I there's a sort of discrepancy, disconnect there, which I find very hard to accept and understand. But I would like to say that when the theme of this conversation is the future of the symphony orchestra as an institution and the future of the concert as a form, we cannot separate the institutions from the art itself. So music is doing fine. Some institutions around the world are struggling a bit. Some more, some less. Some institutions are doing really, really well, like the Philharmonie here. But music as an art form is very strong. And we have to kind of understand that. And also we cannot, on the other hand, we cannot talk about the future of the symphony orchestra without talking about the future of music, because that is what we do. We perform music composed by composers, either dead or living. And what happens to music as an art form obviously dictates the way how our future looks as institutional leaders.
I completely forgot when we talked about Paris that we were going to show a very short film of Esa-Pekka conducting a symphony orchestra, so maybe we could show the first film. This is from a few months ago, Esa-Pekka Salonen conducting Bruckner. Was the Orchestre Paris conducted by Esa-Pekka Salonen, the fourth symphony of Bruckner. I promise we're going to get to the subject, But I think there's one important place to talk about, which is Los Angeles, and you talked about it for a moment, that you actually had the privilege to be, to play a part in actually building a concert hall. Now, a symphony orchestra clearly needs a concert hall or a place in which to play, and there are fewer places better adapted to that than the Philharmonie. But I think it's important to talk a little bit about what that meant for you to build a concert hall with your friend, your very close friend, Frank Gehry, and how you approached the idea of a hall and how that became a part of the community and a home for the Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra.
It was a long story, actually. The whole process took 15 years. From the first donation from Lillian Disney, who was the widow of Walt Disney, to the opening day, it was 15 years. And I was involved in this process from the very start, actually. And it was a very challenging thing. There were ups and downs. And LA as a city, Los Angeles as a city, went through also very difficult times. During the process, there were the riots at some point with a lot of devastation. There was an earthquake and so on. And for a time, we felt that it was not going to happen because the idea of building a new concert hall in downtown LA was seen as a superfluous idea because there were so many other more acute problems. But finally it happened. And the very start, I had long talks with Frank Gehry about what we would like the concert space to say, and what would be the message, the semiotics of a concert hall. And we both felt that a concert hall should be open by its nature. In the US especially, many of the concert halls that were built in the 60s and 70s and early 80s were built on at an elevation. So you would have to kind of climb up to get to the concert hall, i.e. you would have to earn it. You would have to earn the right to be in this great temple of immortal art. And you have to look up. Like the idea of medieval churches, basically, that the space would kind of radiate the glory of God, and it would also, as a side product, it would make you feel little approaching it, and also not only the glory of God, but also the glory of the king or the prince or whatever who was, by building this space, would also show his power and prosperity and so on. Anyway, so we felt that concert hall has to be open from the street level. Preferably, it should symbolically radiate excitement, openness, inclusivity, and movement. We both felt that movement is an important idea in all this. And also, Frank was very keen to make sure that the basic function of this concert hall would be the top priority, i.e. that it would be a perfect space for performing music, orchestral music, in the perfect acoustics and so on. So his ego never got in the way. Sometimes architects have problems with acousticians and so on, but in this case, never. And we experimented with this optimal seating of a symphony orchestra. We experimented with the construction of the risers, where the musicians sit, and how to best design the risers so that everybody would be sitting close together but not too far away, and so on. And then the hall finally opened in 2003, and that, I dare say, changed the life of and future of music in Southern California. And now the Walt Disney Concert Hall has replaced the cardboard Hollywood sign on Hollywood Hills as the symbol of LA, which I'm very happy about. So, as I said before, a concert hall, a performing arts center, can really be an agent of social growth and improvement and gentrification, whatever that word is, has some unpleasant connotations, but basically to create an urban environment where families can exist, for instance.
So we have a concert hall, and we put an orchestra inside it. And I wonder, we're supposed to be talking about the symphony orchestra of tomorrow, the role of the symphony orchestra, but I'd like to look at that from the other end of the question, which is the role of the individual musicians in a symphony orchestra. And sometimes I think that we are held back by the look of a symphony orchestra on stage and the look of 100 penguins standing there, sitting there. And we forget that actually everybody has their own story and their own life. And it's something that we try to do as much as possible to honor every individual artist in an orchestra, for which reason we have four of our musicians playing this evening after this concert. So perhaps I could start by asking you, what's the role of individual artists within a symphony orchestra?
That's everything. I mean, a great symphony orchestra has 100 plus great artists. And the miracle that we are witnessing every day is that these 100 plus people come together and become one. And I've been doing this for a long time, and I still don't quite understand how it works. People with different backgrounds, people with different opinions, people with different tastes, and so on, they come together, and together with those musicians, we become more than the sum of its parts. So it becomes something, really a living organism. And sometimes I feel that this organism has its own will, which is not easy to explain, but I sometimes use the school of fish as a metaphor, you know, like you see in films of mackerel swimming in the ocean in perfect formation, and then a predator fish turns up, and they curl into a perfect ball. And we don't know how it happens. Science still...
Hold on, are you the predator?
Well, I wouldn't want to see myself as such, but it's just like a great orchestra has this unbelievable hive intelligence. And I still don't quite know how it happens. The idea of all these 100 people connecting, I mean, obviously they connect by using their hearing. They hear what the neighbor is doing and the colleagues. But then there's also the visual connection. You know, a string player can see their colleagues and how they move and so on. And of course, there's a conductor somewhere on the box. But then there's something that science doesn't quite know yet. And for me, sometimes it feels like telepathy, that we sense each other. And it's not based on any one sense. It's some kind of different kind of communication. And I have had this experience with the Orchestre de Paris so many times in since the early days. And that's one of the greatest pleasures in the life of a conductor, that you think of something and then it happens. And you don't actually know how. But these musicians, they can just do it. And so individuals, yes, but an orchestra is a place where you become more than just one individual. You become also more than just 100 individuals. You become like one mind. And that's the miracle why we still exist. Because, you know, the symphony orchestra is an old invention. Since Beethoven added trombones to the symphony orchestra, we haven't really changed much. The concept is pretty much the same. Okay, there's more percussion and maybe some electronics every so often, but by and large, it's still the same. So what does this tell us? It doesn't say that this is a calcified idea that is going to go extinct soon. It does not say that. What it says is that there's something that has this unbelievable vitality and life force within it. And that's why we are still here. And that's why people are still coming to listen to us. And that's why thousands of talented young musicians audition to get into these orchestras. So it's not something that is being kept alive artificially as some kind of elitist memory of the past. No, no, it's very much alive.
I know that I'm supposed to be asking you questions, but I just wanted to say one thing that fascinates me. Last week, the Orchestre Paris gave a concert in Vienna with Klaus Makala. In Amsterdam. And the night before, Esa-Pekka Salonen conducted the Swedish Radio Symphony Orchestra in a performance of Debussy, La Mer. I like this fish analogy. We can make it run all evening. And yesterday, Esa-Pekka Salonen conducted Debussy, La Mer, with the Orchestre Paris. And we've had lots of discussions with Olivier about repeating the same pieces over the course of a season. Now, the Swedish Radio Symphony is a fantastic orchestra. I used to work there. Esa-Pekka Salonen is an incredible conductor. Yesterday with the Orchestre Paris, also a fantastic orchestra, two pieces with the same conductor, the same piece that sound completely different. And isn't that at the base of what we're talking about in terms of the identity of a symphony orchestra, that you can take music and it is interpreted by a group of people that is different every time?
Well, that's the magic, of course, that every orchestra has a voice and an identity. And indeed, what makes this profession, i.e. conducting orchestras, so interesting is that, as you said, the same piece can sound fundamentally different. And my concept is pretty much the same, with some modifications, but the concept is pretty much the same. But of course, I'm experienced enough to take what the orchestra offers and then maybe modify that a little bit, but basically I take the orchestra's idea of the piece and then we have a two-way dialogue. The orchestra influences me and I influence the orchestra, and the result is something that is always different. So it never gets old. It never gets boring. I mean, there are moments when I curse my life. I wake up, you know, on tour somewhere and haven't slept well, and it's an early morning, and then I have to pack my suitcases and go to the next place and this and that. And I sometimes think maybe I should have gone to law school after all. But at the end of the day, it's never boring. I have not had one boring moment in my professional life since I started. And it's because of this, the contact with people. And it's astonishing.
I've got 10 minutes not to screw it up.
So we should map out the future of this art form, right?
I'd like to just show one film now, which was a project that we created between Los Angeles Philharmonic and the Orchestre de Paris. Esa-Pekka Salonen said, conductors are parasites in the musical system who get all the attention. Maybe you could cue Stravinsky Les Noces. Les Noces de Stravinsky with the fantastic choir of the Orchestre de Paris. The Orchestre de Paris, illustrations by Hilary Laban, conducted by Esa-Pekka Salonen. Now, it was a little bit controversial that some people didn't adore it, but I loved the humor of it. And I think that there are no rules in what we tried to do together in Paris with Olivier. I don't think that there can be any constraints, and hopefully you agree, otherwise we have nothing to talk about for the next 5 minutes.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, if I have to kind of describe myself in one word, it's I'm curious. And I'm curious about this art form and the future of it, of this art form, and I'm completely fascinated by what can be done. And sometimes, you know, not everything works out perfectly, and sometimes we discover things that surprise even ourselves in terms of how well they work and so on. But I don't want to be a passive observer of, you know, the cultural and societal change. I don't want to be a train watcher. I want to be on that train. And, you know, I know we are running out of time, but, you know, the biggest agent of change at the moment, at least if you read the papers or follow the media, is, of course, artificial intelligence. And everybody is trying to figure out, A, am I needed in 5 years from now? B, if I'm still needed, in what way will I relate to the artificial intelligence that obviously is going to be everywhere, and so on. And so that's one area where I really want to kind of take a look at what we can do. And again, I would much rather be like driving the car than sitting in somewhere and just seeing it go by. And the other area, of course, is electronics generally, the digital possibilities we have now, which are really amazing, but what my kind of music has not used them extensively or at all. I'm talking about virtual reality, I'm talking about augmented reality, and other ways to add elements to a classical music experience. Having said all that, I still believe in the good old-fashioned concert. Why? I think that we are all suffering from the overload of information, and most of us are connected through touchscreens to all information available to mankind at all times, and that's stressful. And also we have lost some rituals in life that have been so important to humans since the beginning of early stages of our species. And I believe that what we can offer in a straight, simple symphony concert is curated experience. Somebody has curated a dramaturgy out of all music that is there for you. And you, i.e. the audience members, are allowed to come in and not to be in touch with the digital information stream for an hour and a half or 2 hours, and you can just disconnect and enjoy the ritual that is a symphony concert, and feel free to be taken away. And I think as the world is getting even more fractured, and as culture is getting more fractured with the internet and the fractured nature of the internet, I think this kind of, almost like a tribal experience, is very powerful. And I had this, I really felt this very strongly after the pandemic. Of course, we had access to music during the pandemic on the internet and, you know, recordings and so on. But it was all very sad. You know, the concerts where conductor comes in and takes a bow, but there's nobody in the audience, and it was just very sad. And then I went to the first concert as an audience member when it was allowed again, and I realized that this is my tribe, these people, and they're not exactly like me. They might be different from very different parts of society, different from different parts of the world, cultural, religious, all kinds of differences. But this is my tribe in the sense that we all want to be here and that we all love the same thing. So I felt I belong here with these people. And I had never kind of really thought about that before. And the whole thing about the concert, I had a glass of wine, and then I sat down, and I was just deeply grateful. When I heard the orchestra tuning, so many of these people were at this concert for the first time in 8 months or 9 months or something. People started applauding when they heard the tuning. It was like the happiest moment in our lives. And I must say, the pandemic made me understand the power of this ritual that we represent and offer. And it goes way deeper than just a sort of a cultural experience. It's almost biological. So we have an important function in society.
If I'd had the time, because we're up now, I would have asked you how we can learn to be as curious as you. I mean, we've worked together for 8 years, and I've never met anyone more curious. He said it, I didn't need to add it. I wonder whether there's one thing I could ask of all of you, which is that you trust us, and more than anything, you trust him, because his curiosity, I'm sure, is going to pay dividends to what happens in Paris with the Orchestre de Paris, with the Philharmonie de Paris. But in the meantime, Esa-Pekka, thank you so much for this hour together. Giant, superhero, conductor, composer, horn player, troublemaker.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.